earlier just today, which dovetails absolutely beautifully with one of the ideas that Rabbi Rosenfeld just taught us. This is really a Minash of mine that I heard this. I heard this from Rabbi Asaf Bednarsh, who said something over from the so we'll do the short version until Rabbi Rosenfeld gets here, the 10 or 15 minute version. It's a really interesting question, which is this, basically he was doing an analysis of this very common practice to ask people for forgiveness on Erev Yom Kippur. And where does it come from? Okay. In fact, it's brought down in the Ramah, in the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tav Beishvav, Sif Bet. So the Ramah says, V'nahagu levakesh mechila be'erev Yom Kippur. We have a minhag to ask mechila from people on Erev Yom Kippur. And the truth is, there's another, really, Rabbi Bednarsh didn't mention this today, but the truth is, if you really think about it for just a moment, it's very odd that you ask on Erev Yom Kippur. Besides that, there are a lot of details for this minhag, the process of asking somebody forgiveness. Somebody's done something wrong, somebody else, whether we paskin, you're obligated to ask them for forgiveness, you're obligated to ask them three times if you need, you bring friends to petition on your behalf. If the person refuses to forgive you, consider cruelty, especially after three times. That's the basic premise. But if that's so, in other words, and we really expect that people are going to open up old issues, things that are, you know, not to create a fight out of nowhere. But if there's this passive aggression after a long, there are scabs, you want to get rid of those scabs, you want really everything to be healed. And so it's understandable, it's really realistic to say, you know, somebody might not forgive you right away, so you have to make efforts. You might have to ask three times. And even so, on the other hand, if a person is really sincerely asking you, it's cruel to deny them if they're really asking you. But the truth is, so if that's the case and we understand that you're even bringing up painful, deep conflicts, so why wait till Erev Yom Kippur? That's really not even fair. I turned to somebody, and Rabbi Bednarsh said, this is a little game we played in elementary school. Everybody goes up to everyone and says, Are you mochli? That's not sincere at all. You're not really asking for forgiveness. I mean, you're asking for forgiveness because you want to get off the hook, but you're not really apologizing. That's not, where's the forgiveness there? Where's the regret? Where's the remorse? And where's the sincerity? And I'm never going to do it again. You're never going to do it again. No, you don't mean that at all. All you mean is, tomorrow I have a judgment. Please don't make me die because I used to call you names in class or whatever it is. Right? But the truth is, and because the other person has this label that you're going to be cruel hanging over them, so of course the other person has to say yes. So you say, Arimochami, you're half sincere. And the other person, because he doesn't want to be cruel, is sincere, has to say yes. So why is it fair to set somebody up like that? And really, what's it worth? Really, what is it worth? Not just for sixth graders. Adults, if adults behave the same way, why is it worth anything? So the truth is, for a while, I said to myself, well, I shouldn't wait till Erev Yom Kippur. The din already starts in Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. And in theory, not that I have any real hopes that I'm going to trick God into thinking I'm a tzaddik gemur and he's going to sign me out on Rosh Hashanah completely. But you want everything to be as clear as possible, as early as possible. So why wait till Erev Yom Kippur? Especially, you know, besides that, sometimes you're not going to reach somebody on the phone. Why wait till the last minute specifically? You think Rosh Chodesh Elul. I mean, really. So many reasons not to wait. So that's another aspect here. Why specifically should we wait till Erev Yom Kippur? Is there some inherent value in asking forgiveness on Erev Yom Kippur as opposed to the general notion that if somebody wrongs somebody else, again, in a very general sense, I did something bad against you, I did it to you in Cheshvan, why should I wait all the way until the Yom Kippur to ask forgiveness? Okay, let me ask you, okay, maybe in the moment you're mad now, maybe you'll be mad tomorrow. Next week, after things smooth over a little bit, I'll call you then. Why should I wait altogether? So that was one of the questions Bednarsh asked. And that's basically the premise. Then he read a very interesting Gemara, which tells a number of stories, which seem to be related to this principle, from the Gemara in Yoma, Daf Pei Zayin, Amud Aleph and Amud Bet. So the Gemara recounts a number of incidents involving different Amoraim, that relate to this notion of asking for forgiveness on Erev Yom Kippur. So the first one opens with the following statement: Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kol ha-maknit et chabero, afilu bidvarim, tzarich lefayso. Anybody who Shechmit teases, antagonizes, probably the best word, I think, antagonizes his friend, even if it's just verbally, he has to appease them. L'faye is definitely connected to the word appease. Okay? And then there's a pasuk that's brought in that context. And then we have a number of stories and actual incidents. Rabbi Yirmiyah havale milta l'Rabbi Amma bahadei. Azal etav adasha de Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Yirmiyah had an incident with Rabbi Abba, and he went to resolve it. Bahadei deshadya amate maya mata zazife de maya aresha. And when Rabbi Yirmiyah went, Rabbi Abba's maid, Rabbi Yirmiyah was going to ask forgiveness from Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Amma's maid was cleaning up, and she poured out the dirty water from the house. Dirty water means dirty water, okay? And some drops fell on Rabbi Yirmiyah. Amar, asa'uni ka'ashpa. So Rabbi Yirmiyah got all excited. I said, oh good, she made me like a garbage heap. Kara nafshe, and he said the pasuk, me'ashpot yarim ebyon. Hashem will lift me up from the ashpot, from the garbage heap. So he wasn't upset at all because he was going to ask forgiveness. It's good that I got this little dirt on me. Shama Rabbi Abba heard what had happened, v'nafak le'apei, and he went to meet, went out to Rabbi Yirmiyah. Amar le hashtet zrichna l'mifak adatei. So now I have to ask forgiveness of you. Now I made you, I didn't make you dirty, but my maid made you dirty. It's from my house. I'm responsible. Iktiv lechit rapes v'ahav v'yachav. Okay. So Rabbi Bednar said, what's the big deal? First of all, do we really think that Rabbi Yirmiyah did something horrible to Rabbi Abba that he has to go, this is static? I didn't think that's necessarily the strongest question because we're also people. But you know, it's a little bit presumptuous for me to judge Amoraim based on my own standards. In order to get to be an Amora, you have to hold yourself to a high standard. So presumably, the little petty things that I could say to people shouldn't impose upon the Amoraim. But nonetheless, the other side is very odd. Rabbi Amma definitely didn't do anything at all to Rabbi Yirmiyah. It was only his maid. And his maid also, she didn't do anything, definitely didn't do anything on purpose. And it's just droplets of this dirty water. He has to go out and appease him, and he has a responsibility to do that. If you want to talk about a technical sin, where's the technical sin? What's the necessity in that? There are a couple other stories as well. Here's a really fascinating story. Rab havale milta bahadei hahutabacha. Lo atalakame. Rab had a fight, some kind of an issue that was going on with the local butcher, and he didn't go before him. He never came to apologize, this butcher. So Rab said, "Listen, we're coming to Yom Kippur. I want to get this, bury the hatchet, the butcher. I want to get over the issue." But again, Rab wasn't the transgressor. He wasn't the offender. Okay, Rab is the one who had been offended. So nonetheless, he went out of his way in order to try to get the butcher to apologize to him. B'ma'ale yom ha'kippuri, on Erev Yom Kippur, Amar Ihu, he said, Izal ana l'fayusele, let me go and make peace with him. Paga be'ravuna, Ravuna saw him, Amarle l'hencha ka'azul mar. He said, then where are you going? Amarle l'fayusele l'planya, I'm going to resolve my conflict with the butcher. Amar, Ravuna said to Rab, you're going to the butcher? Azil Abba l'miktal nafsha. You're going to kill somebody. You're going to kill him. He's going to kill him. He's going to make peace with him. What does he mean he's going to kill him? Well, we'll see. Azal v'kami lay, he went to him. Haviyati v'kapali resha. He was going, the butcher was standing over a skull. He was processing a skull. You know, he's a butcher, so he chops up meat all day. So he was working on the skull. Dali Eine Bechazeh, he picked up his eyes and he saw Rab standing at the door. Amarle, Abbat! You're Abba, that was his first name. You don't call the devil on the door by his first name. But this, you see a little sense of who this butcher is. You're Abba! Zil, lately milta bahadach. Get out of here, I have nothing to say to you. Okay, this is Erev Yom Kippur. And this is the kosher butcher, by the way. Probably is the kosher one. Right? He says, get out of here. I have nothing to say to you. Vahadi the Kapali Resha Ishtamit Garama. As he was processing the skull, a certain bone slipped out of the skull. Umachi Bekue Bekatle. And the bone slipped out and hit the butcher in the head and killed him. Okay, so indeed, Rav Huna was right. Rav was going to kill the butcher on purpose, of course. The question is, so didn't Rav anticipate this? And the truth is, and Rav Huna kind of warned him against it. Why did Rav have to go out of his way? He knew, he must have known, that the butcher was plenty mad. Again, Rav just wasn't the offender, but something had happened, and the butcher got very angry, and the butcher had offended Rav. So Rav knew that the butcher wasn't interested in making peace, so why is he going out of his way, like I said before? Kind of like setting up. You go to somebody, you apologize, when you know that they're going to reject your apology, what value is that apology?
Well, can also
why,
be,
why do you have to go out of his way?
Right. It can also be just like you started off with, that it's Erev Yom Kippur, people are more likely to give you, to forgive you.
Right.
So maybe you thought there was a chance.
Right, so maybe you thought there was a chance, okay? And the truth is, even on a micro level, we're talking about one sin at a time. The truth is, there is good reason. Rav didn't have to, because he wasn't the offender. He did not have to do this. Okay, but why would he do it anyway? Why would he go out of his way to try to get the butcher to apologize to him?
One for the butcher's sake, maybe, but also maybe his own. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
People hold
resentment to that. Even just for the butcher's sake.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the butcher also should do tshuva. Chaval, he's a sinner, but he doesn't have to be a sinner. Listen, I know he's angry, and maybe if we talk it out, he'll get over it, and he'll apologize. I'm going to say in shul the tefila zaka, which is printed in the Machzor, it's on some schedules even in some shuls. There's a whole long prayer at the beginning, even before Kol Nidre, going to Yom Kippur, you say, I forgive everybody absolutely for everything they've done against me. That's a proper, a righteous, but a proper thing to do. You go into Yom Kippur, you say, God, listen, I'm ready. There's even a Gemara that says things along that line. Right, and that's right. Kriyat Shema, you say at night. You also say, Harini Muchal Lachol Nishi Kis, Kis Ziyah Shechatak Nekvi. Every night, even there are people who say that. And God, I let go. Don't hold any grudges on my account. I let go of, I'm settling all accounts. So Rav can say that. Rav can already say that. Why does he need to go out of the way and run the risk? Run the risk, or even if it's not running the risk, he's troubling himself. But the point is this, even if he can forgive him and Shemayim, he's going to say, I'm not suing anybody. Right? What does that mean? What that means is that you don't go to the court and you say, I don't have any lawsuits against any defendants over here. So the person's not going to have to pay me restitution. But on the other hand, right, if you say that God is looking down, God looks at this butcher and says, you butcher, you don't have regrets. You didn't do tshuva. So Rav is not suing you, but the state of God, right? The state of heaven has an open issue with you, and you haven't corrected that defect in your soul, this mark that you put on your own personal slate. So you could say that Rav is simply reaching out, going out of his way, simply for the spiritual sake of that butcher. But again, if that's the case, then the truth is that has to be a little bit limited, because you have to say, what are the stakes here? If I already, again, stakes, butcher joke. If I know that there's a good chance that it's not going to end well, then it's really not worth it at all. Because from my end, I'm letting go of my grudges.
Although we live in a time when someone doesn't forgive someone else and they get automatically killed by God on the spot, and also one other rob in the community knows in advance that that's going to happen.
Well, of course.
Of course.
But if you look at the spiritual significance of the whole thing. Right? You don't want to be involved. If you're a generous person as Rav was, and you're thinking about the other person, you don't want to be the cause of further conflict. Mm-hmm. And this is really at the end of the shiur, I asked Rabbi Bednar, I just said, and so what if you know that somebody's not going to forgive you?
Right, that's the question.
Right? If you really know that they're not going to forgive you, is it better or worse to try to smooth it over with? And that's a very difficult question, especially because how can you say you know? How can you really say you know? Sometimes I think you probably do know. The question is, if you're maybe you're setting that person up to be cruel, and it's good for you. If because you've tried. But on the other hand, if you really know it's not going to go well, is the purpose for you to go through the motions or for you to get ultimate peace? That's true. You never know. But here, I thought of a scenario after. So let's say, God forbid, somebody had a conflict with somebody literally the day before you took her, and the wounds are too fresh. You know? So, well, maybe you got
to say, like, oh, you know,
they're going to hit her. Right, right. Yeah, again, I would hope that this is really just a theoretical question, not a practical.
Well, you could say, I don't know if you have a dream, but I need you to know that. Like, you might not expect a result, but you might be
important. Just right, right. You could maybe send somebody on, you know, to speak on your behalf or send a note, leave a note, you know, so you avoid the confrontation, but you express your sentiment and then leave it up to the other person. Person, that's a very important principle in diplomacy, is, you know, diplomacy in the big scale, but also in personal, interpersonal relationships. You want to say things that are heard, you want to say them in ways that they will be heard. It's not, and you don't need to make yourself out to be the good guy. You want to think about the bigger picture and what the real goals are in this relationship and this interaction. Rabbi Bednarz said, even though we're used to and we would normally approach these things very simply, approach these things on a micro level, say a particular sin. You're going for a particular sin, you want to make a particular restitution. And Erev Yom Kippur or Soloveitchik had a totally different approach, which is really fabulous. And like I said, it dovetails very beautifully with Rabbi Rosenfeld was talking about before. And that is, let me see if I can see it inside. So basically, he told the story. This was Rav Soloveitchik's approach. He told the story from his grandfather, Chaim Soloveitchik, Chaim Brisker. He also had an incident with a certain butcher. also had an incident with a certain butcher. And the butcher had...
I know Soloveitchik did, didn't he? It was like the mafia.
That's true also. That's true
with the mafia in Boston.
It's
in
Ramban. There's just that I haven't learned inside. It's in Ramban and Parshat Kitetz. I can speculate. Anyway, the Rav Chaim apparently had a din Torah. He had there was a butcher who came before him who was having a conflict with somebody over a matter of 3,000 rubles. And Rav Chaim heard the sides and decided and suggested the butcher, listen, why don't you try, before he heard the whole case, he said, because the Gemara says you should do this, why don't you try to come to a compromise, you and your litigant? And he said, no, I refuse. You know, I know that I'm right, and I'm absolutely right, and I want to make sure that I get my 3,000 rubles. And so it was all just a fight, you know. This is the time. He said, you don't want to have a compromise, so I'll do good. If that's what you really want, then that's my responsibility as a judge. I'll figure out which way the halakha sways. And he ruled against the butcher. And the butcher was furious. And the butcher started making insults. He said, oh, you're a murderer and you're a thief. And he said, you're a fine soldier. You're a murderer and you're a thief and you're a crook. And going on and on and on and on. And I said, I'm sorry. I suggested to you to do a compromise. You just signed up for compromise. I have to decide in accordance with halacha. This is the way the halacha points. He goes on and on and says even worse things. And the client says, nope, it's a chutzpah already. Get out. Get out. You have to leave my courtroom. Not because it was a certain point. You reach a certain point where he didn't have to, he couldn't tolerate it anymore. So he said, get out. And apparently Rav Chaim went on Erev Yom Kippur to resolve the issue with the butcher. I don't remember now. He said that actually they came to a resolution of the butchers. He still refused. I think the butcher actually still refused. But the question is... That time he didn't get killed. But the question is, why was it necessary for Rav Chaim to do this? Because he didn't do anything wrong at all. And he was, you know, he said, listen, I'm a guy and I'm a Rav Chaim Brisker and you can't talk to me then. You shouldn't be talking. It's Kavanah Torah. I'm bichlal. To say, you're speaking to me with chutzpah? I mean, I don't know, the teacher apologizes to the student when the student speaks with chutzpah and he says, you're out of line. That's what he said, you're out of line. I did something wrong. If I say to you, you're out of line, I really did something wrong. Again, it depends how he said it. I'm sure Rav Chaim would not say it in an objectionable way. So why didn't he have to go out of his way on Erev Yom Kippur? So the Rav said, again, from Rav Chaim, apparently, that when it comes to Yom Kippur, it's not simply tit for tat, micro, this and that, and everything on my docket. I have to clean everything on my docket. In which case, what? Only things that qualify as a sin, only things that I'm responsible for, should I apologize for it? And specifically, again, we can talk about itemizing micro, one for one, this box, this incident, that those specific things, there's a threshold. I did something which is really bad, or I did something which is only a little bit. So only if it really is like a full shear aveir d'oraisa, those things I have to apologize for. That's maybe one way to approach it, but from Soloveitchik said, when it comes to Erev Yom Kippur, there's another aspect. There's an aspect of the forgiveness of the tzibur. And in order for us to really come to Yom Kippur, we have to be, that's why I really love what Rosenfeld said, we have to be a tzibur. We have to be all together. We need the Avaryanim because it's the Jewish people who are coming before God. It's not the Jewish individuals. It's the Jewish people as a people. And the more that we have shalom between each other, the more prepared we are. There's a midrash that also talks about the Malachi Asharet. Bnei Yisrael come before Hashem on Yom Kippur like the Malachi Asharet. What does that mean? Well, we're wearing white, we're standing, we're not eating, we're not drinking. All of the, we kind of divest ourselves of the spirit of the physical life, just like the Malachim. And just like the Malachim, we have shalom. What does we have shalom mean? It means even if somebody's angry at me when I didn't do anything wrong at all. But I need the shalom. That's not my fault at all. But if I can do something to bring the shalom, it supersedes the value of the little particular minor thing that I may have done wrong or I didn't do. Even if I didn't do it wrong, I, as a member of Klal Yisrael, have a vested interest in there being shalom between us, even if it's not my fault at all. And that's really to go beyond just the tit for tat, the little, the micro, like I say, the micro approach to Yom Kippur that we talk about in certain deeds. It's not just the individual components. There's a certain sum whole that we're interested in that we need in order to come to Yom Kippur. There were more proofs to it. The original Yom Kippur was a response to the time when we were all forgiven for the communal sin of Bechet HaEgel. And the Yom Kippur was the day that the Shnei Luchot were given to, the second set of Luchot were given to all of Bnei Yisrael. So Yom Kippur fundamentally is a time for the Jewish people as a whole to be forgiven. If we take this approach and we really look at each other seriously and interest not just in terms of, you know, cover my own bases, cover my own guilt, but actually having a vested interest in the best welfare of all the Jewish people, so hopefully as a Jewish people and also as individuals, may we all merit to a Marcha Tzimtzum.
Amen.
Yeah.
I'm really disturbed by that story.
Yeah.
Can you just give me, what is it that's
which story?
About
The butcher.
Again.
Somebody put the Gemara. The Gemara.
He's saying that it's not always so simple that you should go out of hell. Like, what was the message?
Which one? From
the one
the
that
Gemara?
Died.
The one that died.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, what is it exactly that's bothering you?
Because he went, I don't know, it was just
the gone. I presume, you know, the Gemara is giving us a shorthand, just like any dialogue or any narrative account. Is a shorthand, right? God wouldn't kill this guy, wouldn't make a supernatural occurrence happen to kill this butcher if he really didn't have it coming. Right? So this was just on Erev Yom Kippur that he stands up to the Gadol Hador and still insists out of nothing but pure cruelty. And the truth is, again, we know nothing. We do know nothing. The Gemara says nothing about this man's fate when he gets to the world to come. Okay, but God says, at least on some level, you could say that God says to this person, you're missing out on the opportunity to turn your life around and do good. Maybe it's better for you at this point to exit or left. Okay, and that was basically
Shkaya.
Shkaya. Bye-bye.